Okay, great. Good morning. It is June 6th, 2023. Welcome. And we are going to start with 20 minutes of meditation and then talking. A couple people are still straggling in the back of the room. I'll keep an eye on the door while you guys begin to sit. So just getting comfortable in a meditation posture. You know, that traditionally means sitting upright, but if you're not able or comfortable, you can take whatever posture you find supportive. Whereas I think stillness might be more important, actually, than being upright. So even if you're lying down, if you can just be very still, this will support your calming and focus. And just feeling your body. Feeling your body coming into stillness and having a sense of releasing, settling. Noticing any points or areas of tension in the body and seeing if you can relax those, soften. Noticing too the mood, mind state that you're experiencing this morning, today, breathing with that, just feeling and breathing. Now, this means that we aren't trying to suppress feelings. We also aren't indulging in them, but rather bringing awareness to them, even as we maintain awareness of the breath. We incline towards calming. So not trying to force calming, but seeing if we can gently allow the body to become more calm. And again, using the breath. In breath opens, energizes, the out breath calms and settles. When there are difficult emotions, at times there'll be a tendency not to breathe deeply because of the opening that breathing deeply allows, and we resist opening to those difficult feelings. Now, in that case, we need to bring a gentle, kind, but determined approach to our practice. Trusting that awareness can hold whatever is present, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or just neutral. So we bring mindfulness to the body and the breath and to the feelings. Often enough, it's thoughts that pull us away from these more simple elements of experience. We get carried away. Planning, remembering, analyzing, judging, questioning. And so much of our practice is letting go. Letting go of thoughts, coming back to the body, to the breath. welcome again. For those who don't know me, I am Kevin Griffin, or if somebody maybe just like grabbed this off the internet and they're like, what is this thing? I wanted to say, you know, this is this way of being together that we've had, particularly for the last few years. I want to just sort of remind you that even though we're not in the same physical space, this is an opportunity. It's meant to be an opportunity to bring awareness to a certain period of time during your day, not just for, you know, sitting and meditating, but practicing mindful listening and you know, listening to the Dharma is a great opportunity for watching your mind and watching what your mind does when you're listening. You know, whether it's just, you know, spacing out, or whether it's trying, you know, latching onto an idea and thinking about it, or, you know, getting into some sort of argument in your head with what you're hearing, you know. You know, the idea really is to let all that go and just listen. And you don't have to like remember it or even like agree with it. Or the idea is just to sort of let it go and let it come in and see how it lands. Excuse me. So I've been going through my workbook, Buddhism and the 12 Steps workbook. And the section we're in is really the introduction to meditation. I'm on page 32, although I'm not going to start reading right away. I'm going to read some of it. But I wanted to, you know, I was just kind of reflecting this morning as I was sitting earlier about this process of meditation. And when we look at something like the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, we see a kind of specific process that the Buddha talking about. And in this book, in my workbook, I don't explicitly follow the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, partly because it sort of gets you into the weeds of Dharma in a way that I didn't necessarily want to go with this book, which is meant to be obviously recovery oriented, but also somewhat introductory oriented. And but one of the things that you can sort of observe in the in this process, the Satipatthana process particularly, and indeed in the meditative experience, is the increasing subtlety of the objects that we pay attention to. So in the Satipatthana, we start with the body, which means all the senses, and it includes the breath. And so we're kind of feeling ourselves here, we're hearing things, we're feeling the breath, breathing, sensations. You might smell things, all the senses. And then we tune in to a more subtle experience, which is what's called Vedana, or feeling. So we can keep that on sort of the ordinary level of just how do you feel, right? There's a more specific meaning of it in the Buddhist texts, but we can see that just tuning into how you're feeling is a more subtle thing than feeling your body, right? It's sort of less gross in the you know, that the sense of density kind of. And then the third foundation is called mind states. And this isn't so much thoughts themselves, but just in the text, it says the contracted mind, or the uncontracted mind, the concentrated mind, or the unconcentrated mind. And it kind of like, you know, it could be happy or sad. So it could have an emotional content to it or tone to it. But again, this is even more subtle than just feeling. It's really looking at the mind itself. And in other suttas, the Anapanasati, so some of this sounds like mumbo jumbo if you're not familiar with these terms, but Anapanasati just means mindfulness of breathing. That stage is looking at just mind itself. And here it becomes quite interesting. You know, I was looking at some texts yesterday that were talking about bringing awareness to awareness. And here's where we get to perhaps the most subtle form of conditioned experience. So he, now, in this way of looking at mind, we're actually not paying attention to any of the objects, like the body and the feelings and the thoughts, but trying to be aware of that which is paying attention. So the attention itself, or the awareness itself. And this is extremely subtle and really can only be really known in a concentrated state, which typically is more of like a retreat experience, but useful to understand that this is somewhere we're kind of going to. And the fourth foundation is really about insight. It's about seeing the systems that are operating, the karmic systems, the impermanent systems, the energetic systems. And here now we're applying this concentration to understanding the Dharma, understanding reality, understanding how things come and go, and letting go. So, you know, I take you through that partly to just, you know, hopefully give some clarity to these different kind of elements of meditation that you might work with. And because one of the things that we can sort of expect perhaps out of meditation is some kind of trance-like state. And, I know Ajahn Chah talked about this, about like how says like mindfulness is the opposite of hypnosis, he says. So there's sort of this, I think, this draw that something like a trance has for us that when we're working with just these raw experiences of being a living human and a living being, there can be a wish to escape from it, right? Like just being with your body can be unpleasant, can be difficult. Being with your feelings, you know, and or your mind states, you know, this isn't easy. You know, this is not the easier, softer way. But that kind of brings us to that crossroads, right? Where we see how the connection here with recovery, you know, that meditation can be used, and you might say abused, in order to create altered states and to kind of get away from it all. And that's all very lovely, but we can see how it's got the same risk that that addictive behavior has, that it can be an addictive behavior, and that it doesn't solve anything, right? I mean, this is the fundamental argument against trance-like states, is that you can get into that state and have a pleasant time for a few minutes, but then afterwards you haven't really seen or learned anything. Whereas when you learn to breathe with and be with your body, with your feelings, with your mind states, you start to develop this equanimity, this capacity to be present in your life without having to fix it or run from it or control it. And this is freedom. This is real freedom. This isn't just the escape of temporary pleasant experience. It's this really, I'm going to say transcendent, but it's very much imminent. It's very much real, and yet not trapped in the ordinary reactivity that we have with our unpleasant states or grasping for pleasure, you know. And so that's where we're trying to get to with this practice, is this place not of escaping, but of being fully in reality, but not controlled by the impulses that typically take hold of our minds and our hearts. This is sort of just to, I think sometimes I need to be reminded of what we're doing here, what this is about, because it's so easy to drift into magical thinking about meditation or just, oh, habitual, that's what I do, which, you know, I'm definitely susceptible to that. That's like, well, time to meditate. Okay, I'll go sit down in my chair and, you know, look at my Buddha and, you know, breathe and then I'll get on with my day, you know, but to really cultivate these qualities so that then beyond this short period of time of practice and reflection, I have something that I take with me wherever I go. It doesn't depend upon a mind state or holding on to some feeling that really allows me to be with all of it. So there you go. That was fun. So I'm going to read a little bit from the workbook, and this is page 32. And it's paying attention to mind. So the previous section was paying attention to the body. You can see where I'm going here. Paying attention to mind means noticing our thoughts. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that today, but I wrote this some years ago, and, you know, my mind has changed. Okay, this is very challenging and takes some practice. I will say, yeah, I mean, paying attention to thoughts is really important. So a key element of practice, right? This is very challenging and takes some practice. We're used to just accepting and believing everything we think. But mindfulness asks us to observe our thoughts, to question them, and to become aware of the habitual conditioned ways we think so that we can discover whether our thoughts are true and whether they are useful. It's said that, quote, all experience is preceded by mind. That's said in the Dhammapada. It's said that all experience is preceded by mind. That is, our thoughts create our perception of reality. So if we can become more aware of our thoughts, we can make wiser choices that will improve our lives. Of course, for the addict, this isn't just a theoretical issue. It's a life and death issue. We have to learn a whole new way of thinking about ourselves and about the world. We have to move from a controlling, cynical, and grasping attitude to one of accepting and dealing with life on life's terms. And this begins by just seeing the ways we think and then choosing to let go and open to other viewpoints. At the end of one meditation session at a day-long retreat I taught, one of the participants raised her hand and said, "I didn't realize how much time I spend thinking about work." This was a simple but vital realization. It was a Saturday. She wasn't at work. She was meditating. She didn't need to be thinking about work. Well, thinking about work isn't the worst thing. Why spend your meditation doing it? If you begin to study your own thoughts, you'll find many unproductive streams of thought. Oh, yes. And you'll discover that just by noticing what you're thinking, oftentimes you'll be able to let go right in that moment. Of course, the thoughts might come back, but over time, you'll undermine their power by letting them go repeatedly. the point of mindfulness meditation isn't to stop thinking. Sometimes your thoughts may slow down or become quieter, but even if they don't, just seeing them is incredibly useful. If you are in risk of relapse, noticing thoughts about using can be a vital alarm to tell you that you need to take some action to strengthen your recovery. If you tend toward depression, mindfulness can help to weaken the negative thought patterns that spiral into trouble. If you get swept up in anxiety, seeing the irrationality of your fears can diffuse those triggers. When you struggle in a relationship, seeing all the underlying thoughts of blame or resentment can help you to break out of those destructive views and get a more balanced understanding of what's going on. While mindfulness of the body is perhaps the most effective calming and concentrating aspect of mindfulness meditation, mindfulness of thoughts is the most revealing and psychologically insightful. And then I have a little section of meditation, Introduction to Mindfulness Thoughts. It says, read through this section and then close the book and follow the instructions. Begin by closing your eyes and practicing mindful breathing. As soon as you notice that you are thinking, instead of paying attention to your breath, open your eyes. Ask yourself, what was I just thinking? Review what the thought was. How long were you caught in the thought? What kind of thought was it? A plan, a memory, a worry? Did it have a quality of desire or aversion? Close your eyes again and repeat the exercise. Do this 3 times. Now you're beginning to see your own thoughts. Well, it's pretty simple, but actually, I do think that it's something like that is a helpful introductory exercise, because when we close our eyes to meditate and start paying attention to thoughts, we can quickly drift off into a kind of nebulous blur of the mind, where we kind of can't really tell what's going on. So to just do something very simple, just to get this idea, like, what does this mean, being mindful of a thought? Okay, let's all just do it right now for one second, or whatever, however many seconds it takes for you to have a thought. I just got like a blur of things that were like thoughts about thought. Wait, what are we doing? It just like immediately turns into this like, what's going on? What am I doing? And because, you know, I'm like the teacher. So I'm, what am I going to say next? So there you go. Right. Like, it's all just there. It's kind of, you know, there's these different images we can get, right, of thoughts. One of them is of a train. If you've ever sat and watched a train and the cars are going by. And when I was a kid, there was a train track at the bottom of the hill from where we lived. And we would go down there and we would count how many cars there were. I don't know if anybody here has ever done that. But, you know, and that's very much like you can just do that with your thoughts. Like, there's just this like train, you know. You're lucky actually if it's a train, because those are like distinctive rather than just a blur. But you know, there's also the image of clouds passing through the mind, which I think is a really helpful image. So you can do this as a practice, just like as you're sitting, like, okay, let me just imagine that my mind is the empty sky, and then the thoughts are just passing through as clouds. So again, each of these has this idea of motion and movement, which is critical, right? To see that thoughts are not solid, to see that they are impermanent, and also to have a sense of them not being, you're not stuck in them, you're not lost in them. And then thirdly, that we are making thoughts into objects, because most of the time the thought is subject. I am the thought, right? But if we or I'm able to make a thought into an object, then we're creating this, changing the relationship to them, which is a critical idea, that I am not the thoughts and that I can observe the thoughts and that I can separate from the thoughts. And that again brings us back to, well, what is it that's observing? And that's, you know, as I say, kind of the deeper state of kind of flipping the view, where you're no longer looking at even at the thoughts, but you're looking back at what is looking. You know, Ajahn Sumedho talks about how we can't see our own eyes, and it's kind of that. But we know we're seeing. We can see. So we know that seeing is happening. But see if you can find a way of relating to thoughts, particularly when there's another term, a stream of thoughts, where it is just a blur, so that you're not really being bothered by them, that you're kind of, you know, Suzuki Roshi says, let them come and let them go. And he says, give your cow a large pasture. So I guess the cow is your thoughts. The pasture is your mind. Give it a lot of space and just let them flow through. Again, just changing this relationship where we're not just like caught. Like, it's so easy, you know, it's so easy to get into this, like, oh God, these thoughts. And so when we're meditating, if we get into this relationship of frustration, of struggling with or trying to get rid of or of the thoughts, then we're just sort of doubling down on the problem, rather than just saying, okay, thoughts, you know, I'm not in control here. Step one, right? Powerless over our mind, powerless over our thoughts. I'm just going to let them come and let them go. And that then takes you into the felt experience naturally, because you're going to notice that there is this feeling that this unpleasant, if you're in conflict with your thoughts, you can see that there's this unpleasant feeling you have about your thoughts, or that's in kind of getting triggered by the thoughts, or that's triggered by your not liking the thoughts. And so then you're like, oh, like, I'm not only am I having these thoughts, but and not liking the thoughts, but then I'm getting to have this unpleasant feeling about not liking them. So you see this whole cycle gets created. And each time we just notice, oh, thinking, come back to the breath. We can sort of step out of that cycle. And hopefully that starts to settle. I mean, that's usually what happens over a period of meditation, whether it's 20 minutes or, you know, 20 days, that it just, you know, through the repetitive letting go and coming back, there's a bit of a settling that happens. So then the pleasant thing that we wanted to get out of meditation, that maybe we were hoping to get la trance, the pleasantness can come, but in a healthier and more constructive way that's more useful. So this settling actually happens organically. We don't have to go for like some special state. We just stay present, and we discover that being present and being with our experience without resistance, without grasping, very naturally takes us into a calmer and lighter kind of space. So there's some thoughts for you for this morning. And I hope they're of some value. And I'll just open it up and see if there's any comments or questions. Oh, Steve, hi.
Good morning, Kevin. Thank you for that talk. That was one of your better talks for me, at least. I have everything you're talking about, my meditations. I think when I got into meditation, I was striving for some of that stuff you were just talking about, this trying to find this transcendental moment and everything. But I don't use my meditation for that at all. And I have finally realized that this teachings of the Buddha is the one thing that I, first time in my life, something makes sense to me, you know, on my spiritual journey. It just all makes sense to me. It is all coalescing now with my practice. I love sitting for an hour and I don't expect anything. I just know the thoughts are going to come at me. And I use my meditation to be able to, I'm trying to practice and let go. So I joined this men's only group meeting I talked about. It started back in January. And it's all based on this 12-step stuff. And it's like you start the meeting off with the set-aside prayer, and then you do a gratitude, and then you do the third-step prayer, and then the seventh-step prayer. And it's all this, I'm realizing that I need to let go because I've become kind of judgmental. I really struggle with that stuff, with that God, that male God image, which I just don't believe in. I don't, you know, so I'm trying to learn to let go. And rather than just walk away from the group, we have quite a diversity of people in this group that are some Christians, some Mormons, and some Jewish people. And some of the stuff that they want to talk about is kind of turning me off. But at the same time, and I try not to talk too much about my spiritual trip that I'm on right now, but I just really appreciate all the things that you had to say. It really means I have to learn to let go because I'm kind of tired of trying to fix everything, I have found my journey, and I found my higher power is the Dharma, and I'm really grateful that I have found that. So thank you for letting me share that.
Thanks, Steve. And you know, I think it's really great, like, that you're, what you're talking about, because it's like there's something there for you, and it's like, let's just take what you need and leave the rest, you know. And it's like, don't, you know, to not let that aversive thing and that's like latching on negatively get in the way of the thing that you want. And I do think that we can very often, if we are looking for, positive isn't my favorite term to use, but looking for the benefit rather than critiquing, that we usually find there are many ways, you know, that the subtext is the same thing, right? That the truth and that love and compassion and wisdom are inherent to all these traditions. You know, obviously Buddhism is the best, so, you know, we're the winners and everything. But and the other team, you know, but we don't want to, like, you know, no, but what did I just, geez, that's
well, weird. What you just did is you just reaffirmed what one of the gentlemen who's a Christian talked about his faith in the Trinity. And he said to me on a one-on-one meeting after the meeting, he said, Steve, he says, just learn to let go. Just take what you like out of it and then let go, you know, which is wonderful because there is some benefit to listening to what these men have to say. We're all addicts. Most of them are food addicts. And we all struggle with the same thing. So thank you for that talk.
That reminds me, actually, I got an email from a mother of an anorexic boy this morning. And I don't have any, like, if anybody knows anything about, like, a good treatment for anorexia, please, you know, send it to me. Okay. Side note. So, June, hello.
Hi, Kevin. Okay, so this is a question that I've had for a while. I don't have it continuously, but it comes up every once in a while, kind of a quandary. So when I sit and I've got this just thoughts, stream of thoughts, chaotic thoughts all over the place, can't seem to settle, doesn't settle down. Seems like it, you know, maybe it's combined with several hindrances. It's a hindrance attack, it feels like.
Right.
When I think about it, I think, okay, need to just accept that this is going on. Just watch it, accept it. And then this other little voice comes in and says, no, maybe that's just not trying hard enough. Maybe that's just lazy. Right. I don't know which to do. And I don't know if does that question make sense to you, or?
Oh, of course, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, okay.
And it's very understandable. It's, you know, I mean, the question of effort is really a central one to our meditation practice, because certainly we have to make some degree of effort. But the effort to suppress thoughts or to stop thoughts as a direct, you know, action, like just go at them, is usually counterproductive. So the thoughts will calm down of themselves. You have to give them time. And it's better to treat them kindly. Because, you know, when you treat them, you know, with frustration or aggressively, you're just causing more agitation in the mind. And it's coming out of aversion, that hindrance. So it really does take a kind of, it's like an Aikido move, you know, where you're not going straight at attacking the thoughts, but you're rather kind of letting them come and more like dancing out of the way, if you will, but to make it more of like a martial artist art practice. But so in practical terms, again, what the, it's there's a couple things here, and these are somewhat basically some strategies. One of them is, rather than like trying to stop the thoughts, if you're going to put in more effort, put more effort into paying attention to the breath, and specifically start to pay attention to more details in the breath. Okay, so notice the beginning and the in breath, and then the beginning of the out breath and the end of the out breath. Notice the space between the breaths. So you start to break the breath down into a few different components, right? And that kind of can help capture the mind, capture the attention a little bit more. But another piece for me, this is very important, is that very often when there's a lot of disturbance in the mind, it's because there's going something emotional is going on that I'm not really paying attention to, and then I'm resisting. And this is, I was talking about this a little in the guided meditation, that you'll notice, I was actually mentioned this because it's something I've noticed recently, that when there is some heaviness in the heart or emotional tightness, that the breath itself will become constricted. And so it actually takes a little effort to go, oh, I'm going to open up that, because it's like, I don't want to open up that. I don't want to feel that. So this takes a certain amount of letting go of fear. Right. Oh, if I feel this is, I can't handle this feeling. And the response to that is, yes, I can, because you can. It's just a feeling. Right. But feelings carry this kind of shadow with them. We're like, oh boy, you're going to get enveloped by this. It's like, I'll be okay. I'm just breathing here, you know. So you that kind of really letting the chest and the belly expand and soften. And let the feelings come, but again, really aware of them as energies, just as things that are coming and going. They're sweeping through. They're not, it's not a block of stone resting on your chest, you know, that can't be moved. It's energy in the body. It's emotional energy. And when we just feel it like that as impermanent moving energy, that gives us more confidence to breathe with it. So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, I think it will be very helpful. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you, June.
That absolutely resonated. Yeah.
I know that Angela said she needed to leave at 11. and it is 11:01 on my computer. And so I'm going to have to, if you need to go, I can turn off the recording, right? Whatever.
I think I'll have to stop it now.
Okay. All right. Go ahead and stop the recording. I'm going to have to go very shortly as well. So I'm going to take the last couple questions. And so, John.
Thank you. I'll stop the recording.
Okay. Mm-hmm.